Suspicions swirl after reports that Russia's most powerful mercenary is believed to have been killed in a fiery plane crash.
It shows that the Russian system is a system that is based on murder. It's a mafia-like system.
Plus, Tropical Storm Franklin has unleashed heavy rains and flooding on the island of Hispaniola as catastrophic weather events continue across the globe.
Some very heavy rainfall and, unfortunately, the potential for life-threatening flash flooding over Hispaniola.
And India on Wednesday became the first country to land a spacecraft near the moon's south pole, a technological triumph, as scientists believe the pole could hold vital reserves of frozen water. Today is Thursday, August 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning, I'm Lori London in Washington. Russian authorities say Wagner mercenary leader Yevgeny Prigozhin, who led a revolt against Russia's military in June, was aboard a plane that crashed north of Moscow Wednesday, killing all 10 people on board. The crash, 2 months to the day since he led the abortive mutiny, immediately raised suspicions. Reporters Wednesday asked U.S. President Joe Biden if Russian leader Vladimir Putin could be behind it.
I don't know for a fact what happened, but I'm not surprised.
Prigozhin's rebellion was a severe and shocking challenge to Putin's rule. The Russian president denounced it as treason and a stab in the back and vowed revenge. But charges against Prigozhin were soon dropped. VOA's Russian service asked former U.S. ambassador to Poland Daniel Fried to weigh in on these latest developments.
First, it means that the speculation that somehow Prigozhin had a pass from the Kremlin is over. It appears now as if Putin waited. He may have waited to determine what kind of support Prigozhin had and to follow Prigozhin's movements and communications to figure out who he was in touch with. And when they had gained the information they needed, they went after him. They killed him. In the short run, it probably strengthens Putin's position because he doesn't look weak. He looks like a tough guy. He murders his political opponents. In the longer run, it shows that the Russian system is a system that is based on murder. It's a mafia-like system. And this kind of a system is not very good for the development of the country or making good decisions. Putin has started a war with Ukraine, a war he cannot seem to win. And that war is on his shoulders. He rules by fear. He rules by terror. And that is a way to rule, but not a way to have friends or supporters. It's a way to have fearful servants. And that leaves Putin vulnerable if things should go wrong in Ukraine or anywhere else.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Poland Daniel Fried speaking with VOA's Russian service. The crash follows reports that a top general linked to Prigozhin has been dismissed after vanishing in the wake of the Wagner uprising. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma has that part of the story.
General Sergei Surovichin, a former commander of Russia's forces in Ukraine, who was linked to the leader of the armed rebellion, has been dismissed from his job as chief of the Air Force, according to Russian state media. The report comes after weeks of uncertainty about his fate following the short-lived uprising. Surovichin hasn't been seen in public since the armed rebels' march toward Moscow in June, led by Wagner chief Yevgeny Prigozhin. Surovichin was dubbed General Armageddon for his brutal military campaign in Syria, going on to lead Russia's operations in Ukraine between October 2022 and January 2023. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
At an international conference attended by more than 60 countries on Wednesday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky vowed to end Russia's occupation of the Crimean Peninsula and all other areas that Moscow controls in his country. But for now, firefighters across Ukraine are stretched to the limit. Due to Russia's air assaults on their homeland, this year the firefighters made contacts in the U.S. and Europe that are providing support to help them save lives in Ukraine. Anna Kustachenko reports from Ukraine's Kharkiv region.
Roman Kachanov is a professional rescuer and a firefighter with over 16 years of experience in Kharkiv. He says since Russia's invasion and because of non-stop shelling, his work has become much more intense.
Much more work. With this work, much more intense, and we get more weight on us because we need to wear these vests, which are 30 pounds more what we usually have. But I know, yeah, we have struggle with lack of equipment, lack of training. But now we got a lot of this, thankfully, for the help from the Europe and from America.
Support has also come from the charity foundation United Help Ukraine. founded by American Ukrainians in Washington, D.C. Kachanov and his colleagues met foundation representatives at a large firefighter conference in Indianapolis on April 2023.
While we are just showing our mission to the people, we got a lot of contacts, which also help us to like more efficient contacts in New York, in Chicago, in Washington, and also different fire departments gave us ambulances.
The Kharkiv garrison of rescuers reports getting 10 calls per day in the region. One rescue mission can last up to several days. Because of active hostilities, rescuers face more risks from mines and shelling, says Serhiy Belous, a Kharkiv rescuer with 13 years of experience.
A five-story building was hit by a rocket, and while the guys were extinguishing fire on one side of the building, we were working on getting out the people who were under the rubble, all while shelling was taking place. And since the structures were very unstable, it was scary for all of us, but it ended well.
Since Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022, Kharkiv garrison officials say they have received over 200 specialized machines and equipment from other countries. Because it is close to the front line, the region sees constant shelling from artillery, mortars and aircraft, says Kachanov. And the need for more equipment to clear all the rubble is constant. Anna Kostichenko for VOA News, Kharkiv region, Ukraine.
A deal to expand the BRICS group of leading developing countries appeared stuck in 11th hour negotiations at the leaders' summit on Wednesday, threatening to undermine the bloc's ambition to give the global south more clout in world affairs. Trevor Carroll with Reuters reports.
Leaders of BRICS have made an agreement for expansion. On Wednesday, South Africa said the group of developing countries had agreed to a mechanism for new members, paving the way for dozens of nations to sign up. That could help lend clout to the group, which includes Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, as it seeks to create a viable counterweight to the West. More than 40 countries have expressed interest in joining BRICS, say South African officials. 22 have formally asked to be admitted. They represent a disparate pool of potential candidates from Iran to Argentina. Enlarging the group was top of the agenda at a summit of BRICS leaders in South Africa. Earlier in the day, Chinese President Xi Jinping called for an accelerated process.
We need to use the BRICS Plus cooperation well and accelerate the expansion process. Let more countries join the BRICS family, pool wisdom, and gather strength to make global governance more fair and reasonable.
While all BRICS members had publicly expressed support for growing the bloc, there had been divisions among the leaders about how much and how quickly. The group's members have economies that are vastly different in scale and governments that seem to have few foreign policy goals in common. More details on the framework would be given before the summit concludes on Thursday, South Africa said.
Trevor Carroll with Reuters reporting. Extreme weather continues across the globe. In the Caribbean, Tropical Storm Franklin made landfall Wednesday on the island of Hispaniola, shared by the Dominican Republic and Haiti. National Hurricane Center specialist Philippe Papin says the storm unleashed floods and landslides.
Between 5 to 10 inches of rainfall, with locally higher amounts of up to 15 inches across the central portions of Hispaniola into the day on Thursday. And unfortunately, this is going to produce some catastrophic flash flooding.
Meanwhile, rescuers have evacuated more than 100,000 people from flooded areas of Pakistan's eastern Punjab province in the past 3 weeks, and wildfires burned in northwestern Turkey and Spain's Canary Islands, as well as in Greece, where dozens of blazes devoured forests and homes. This as Greece's Supreme Court has ordered an urgent investigation into racist attacks stemming from the outbreak of the ferocious wildfires in the country's northeast border areas, a key crossing for hundreds of migrants sneaking in daily from Turkey. Antti Karasava reports from Athens.
The Supreme Court order comes after Greece's summer of wildfires took a deadly turn this week. Search teams found the bodies of 18 migrants who had been burnt beyond recognition in a wooded area that had gone up in flames in Alexandroupolis, bordering Turkey. In a separate case, a man was arrested late Tuesday after posting a social media video showing him pulling a trailer along a dirt road, then asking another person to swing open the rear door, revealing 13 Syrian and Pakistani migrants, all handcuffed and visibly frightened. In the video, the man is heard shouting in Greek, "Let's get organized." He calls for others to go out and, in his words, round them up, saying they will burn us. Vigilantes are ubiquitous in Greece's rugged northeast border areas, which are key crossing points for thousands of asylum seekers sneaking into the country from neighboring Turkey. As Greece grappled with a fifth day of ferocious wildfires raging across Alexandroupolis, the country's high court weighed in on Wednesday. The court ordered a crackdown on vigilantes who have accused migrants of setting the fires and inciting other locals to go after them. Migration Minister Dimitris Keridis quickly spoke in support of the court's action against hate crimes. In Greece, he said, the law of the land prevails. Not those who choose to take it in their own hands. Across the country in the past week, behavior with the worst raging out of control in Alexandroupolis and on the outskirts of Athens, near a national reserve. Schools, hospitals, homes for the elderly, and a monastery housing nuns have been evacuated. A migrant camp with 800 asylum seekers in Athens was also cleared out on Wednesday, and migrants moved to another housing facility about 50 kilometers south of the Greek capital, Athens. Firefighters across Greece say they fear the worst is yet to come. Searing temperatures and gale force winds were forecast for several days before rainfall was expected to bring some relief. Antikara Sava, VOA News, Athens.
We're following these other stories from around the world. Thailand's new prime minister is promising to bring unity to its country and promote policies that solve crises and move the country forward. In a televised address Wednesday, the new leader pledged to govern for the benefit of all Thais and bring in a new era that promotes inclusiveness. North Korea's second attempt to place a spy satellite in orbit failed on Thursday after the rocket booster experienced a problem during its third stage, as the country's space authorities vowed to try again in October. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say a new coronavirus mutation may be more infectious for people who were vaccinated or previously had COVID-19 than assumed. The agency says it's still too soon to tell whether it will cause more severe illness than previous variants. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the journal Geophysical Research Letters provides evidence that between 1993 and 2010, humanity pumped out so much groundwater that it caused the Earth to tilt a bit on its axis. The study suggests that the Earth's poles have drifted nearly a meter during that time. Scientists propose that the distribution of water on Earth affects how our planet's mass is spread. In a press release from the American Geophysical Union, scientists studying previous climate models have estimated that between 1993 and 2010, we humans have pumped out a total of 21.5 trillion tons of groundwater. Study authors say removing this amount of water has added 6 millimeters to the rise in global sea level. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. Rudy Giuliani, Donald Trump's personal lawyer and confidant, turned himself in at a jail in Atlanta on Wednesday on charges related to efforts to overturn then-President Trump's loss in the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. Speaking to reporters as he was leaving, Giuliani defiantly defended himself and Trump.
I talked to the president today. I wish him well. I have every confidence in him. What they are doing to him is an assault on the American Constitution.
A former New York mayor was indicted last week along with Trump and 17 others.
This will be proven to be, like all the rest, a complete hoax and a lie. One of the worst, actually. I don't know if you can compare situations where you destroy First Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights. This could be the worst. because of all the people that it brings in who really don't deserve this.
Former President Trump is expected to surrender on Thursday. This is Republican presidential hopefuls converged in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for their first debate Wednesday evening. Trump leading significantly in the early polls, but skipping the debate and doing an interview with former Fox News commentator Tucker Carlson instead. While the Islamic State terror group continues to lose influence in Iraq, U.S. Major General Matthew McFarlane recently warned that IS remnants still pose a threat to areas not under the protection of the U.S.-led coalition, including parts of Syria. Analysts see the Islamic State expanding into Africa and Asia. For VOA, Dale Gavlak reports from Amman.
U.S. Major General Matthew W. McFarlane commands the Combined Joint Task Force, Operation Inherent Resolve, based in Iraq, working to defeat Islamic State militants and prevent their resurgence. In an online briefing to journalists this month, McFarlane called the group ISIS as well as the Arab acronym Daesh, said Islamic State no longer controls any territory, has lost leaders and fighters, and carries out fewer attacks than in the past. He said there was a 65% reduction in Islamic State activity this year compared to last year.
They continue to degrade. Having said that, there are still radical fighters out there that aspire to reemerge or rebuild the caliphate. We work very closely with our Iraqi counterparts. We share intelligence to make sure we address any possible reemergence or any possible threats that emerge from those ISIS fighters that are still at large. We also work to address the long-term efforts like repatriation of IDPs and Daesh detainees that are in the detention facilities in Syria.
Stephen Heidemann, a non-resident senior fellow at Washington's Brookings Institution, told VOA that McFarlane gave a fairly balanced assessment of Islamic State at this time. However, Heidemann points to a recent United Nations report that says the Islamic State group still commands between 5,000 and 7,000 fighters in Syria and Iraq.
There's certainly no sense we can declare mission accomplished in terms of Operation Inherent Resolve. It continues to play an important role in degrading ISIS, and yet ISIS retains the ability to sustain pretty high levels of insecurity in eastern Syria and northwestern Iraq. We can't underestimate the extent to which local groups that publicly affiliate with ISIS have in some ways overtaken the core group as a source of threat. Africa is clearly one arena in which we're seeing that happen.
A South Africa-based analyst, Martin Iwe, has also warned of the growing threat in Africa, where Islamic State is active in more than 20 countries already. He cautioned that the continent may represent the future of the caliphate. Analyst Nicholas Harris at Washington's New Lines Institute tells VOA that Islamic State is like a perennial, dormant in the Middle East heartland, but regenerating and springing to life in Central Asia and Africa.
ISIS has numerous cells in Syria and has also established in that sort of western badlands of Iraq a support network. ISIS has tried to manage the reality that it is a organization that's looking for this opportunity to spring back. The ISIS brand globally has found opportunity to grow in Central Asia, particularly Afghanistan, but also it's looking to spread into Pakistan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and is looking to try to take advantage of rising communal religious tensions in India.
Harris said that in Africa, Islamic State is trying to take advantage of the war in Sudan and the destabilization of Ethiopia. Dale Gavlak for VOA News, Amman.
Drone photographers and videographers from around the world submitted more than 65,000 pieces of work in an annual online competition. VOA's Julie Tabot highlights some of the winning entries.
Bird's eye views of land and seascapes can offer a rare glimpse into some of the remotest areas on Earth, get us close to wildlife, and provide different views of some of the world's most iconic sites. These striking images were just a few of the winning entries in a recent drone video and photo contest that was organized by DJI, a leading drone company, and SkyPixel, one of the world's most popular online platforms for aerial photographers and videographers.
The competition was created to really push the boundaries of what drone videography and photography could capture.
drones as an artistic medium have greatly evolved over the past few years.
It went from just, you know, niche drone enthusiasts to now we're seeing hobbyist photographers, professional filmmakers, and just, you know, people who are super into technology.
One of those people is David Zelka, a professional videographer and drone pilot who is one of the winning contestants. He captured images of the Dolomite mountain range in Italy with an FPV, or first-person view drone, which can fly at higher speeds and with a wider range of movement than regular drones.
If you fly an FPV drone, you put the goggles on and you have manual control over everything. It can fly in a freestyle way. It can fly in every direction.
Thanks to drone technology, people the world over get to see images they would never likely see in their lifetimes. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
People are applauding. Let us all wait to hear from the Secretary, Department of Space, and Chairman ISRO, Sri S. Somnath.
An Indian spacecraft became the first to land on the rugged, unexplored south pole of the moon on Wednesday in a mission seen as crucial to lunar exploration and India's standing as a space power just days after a similar Russian lander crashed. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who waved the Indian flag as he watched the landing from South Africa, where he's attending the BRICS summit, called it an unforgettable moment. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, we thank you very much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In early 2020, the government of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, or DPRK, locked down the country's borders to prevent the spread of the COVID-19 virus. That lockdown continues today. Indeed, rarely has the DPRK been more painfully closed to the outside world than it is today, said Volker Turk, UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Increasing repression of the rights to freedoms of expression, privacy and movement, the persistence of widespread forced labor practices, and a worsening situation for economic and social rights due to the closure of markets and other forms of income generation has caused human suffering of enormous scale and magnitude. Nearly a decade ago, a United Nations Commission of Inquiry issued a landmark report which found the DPRK government had committed systematic, widespread, and gross human rights violations, that in many instances, the violations entailed crimes against humanity, said United States Representative to the United Nations, Linda Thomas Greenfield. The situation has not improved since then, she said.
Reports indicate the DPRK continues to hold more than 80,000 individuals in political prison camps, where, according to reports, they are widely subjected to arbitrary or summary executions, torture, starvation, gender-based violence, forced abortions, and forced labor.
Furthermore, the DPRK government has also engaged in acts of transnational repression against its own citizens and foreign nationals, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
The DPRK's activities abroad have included assassination, surveillance, intimidation, abduction, and forced repatriation, sometimes with the assistance of other governments, and sometimes without the consent of other governments, which shows the DPRK lack of respect for state sovereignty.
Kim Jong-un's repressive, totalitarian control of society and the systematic widespread denial of human rights and fundamental freedoms ensures the regime can expend inordinate public resources developing its unlawful WMD and ballistic missile programs without public objection, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. This war machine is powered by repression and cruelty.
Make no mistake, the regime neglects the well-being of people in the DPRK. Its food distribution policies favors the military and lead to chronic malnourishment among its citizens.
The modern world has no place for the DPRK government's brutality, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. The international community must continue to speak out against this injustice and its destabilizing impact on regional and international peace and security. The United States will continue to promote human rights and fundamental freedoms at home and around the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.